and welcome back to Page Turn, the Largo Public Library podcast. I'm your host, Hannah. Page Turn is a we-try-to-be-monthly, but sometimes pandemics happen podcast, bringing you information about great books, library news, and fun library tidbits from your favorite programs, as well as a Spanish language book review from Victor. But as always, we start with Reader's Advisory. A revelation shared between two privileged teenagers from very different backgrounds sets off a chain of events with devastating consequences. On the surface, Nairu leads a charmed life. Raised by two attentive parents in Washington, D.C., he's a top student and a track star at his prestigious private high school. Bound for Harvard in the fall, his prospects are bright. But Nairu has a painful secret. He is queer, an abominable sin to his conservative Nigerian parents. No one knows except Meredith, his best friend, the daughter of prominent Washington insiders, and the one person who seems not to judge him. When his father accidentally discovers Nairu is gay, the fallout is brutal and swift. Coping with troubles of her own, however, Meredith finds that she has little left emotionally to offer him. As the two friends struggle to reconcile their desires against the expectations and institutions that seek to define them, they find themselves speeding toward a future more violent and senseless than they can imagine. Neither will escape unscathed. Today's Reader's Advisory is Speak No Evil by Uzodinma Iweala. Speak No Evil is a literary fiction title set in Washington, D.C. It deals with heart-wrenching LGBTQIA family issues and the immigrant experience. Readers will enjoy the candid and compelling writing style. Readers may also enjoy Happiness, Like Water by Chinelo Okparanta. Here are Nigerian women at home and transplanted to the United States, building lives out of longing and hope, faith and doubt, the struggle to stay and the mandate to leave, the burden and strength of love. Here are characters faced with dangerous decisions, children slick with oil from the river, a woman in love with another despite the penalties. Here is a world marked by electricity outages, lush landscapes, folktales, buses that break down and never start up again. Here is a portrait of Nigerians that is surprising, shocking, heartrending, loving, and across social strata, dealing in every kind of change. Here are stories filled with language to make your eyes pause and your throat catch. Or Every Kind of Wanting by Gina Frangiello. Every Kind of Wanting explores the complex intersection of three unique families and their bustling efforts to have a community baby. Miguel could not be more different from his partner Chad, a happy-go-lucky real estate mogul from Chicago's wealthy North Shore. When Chad's sister Gretchen offers the couple an egg, their search for a surrogate leads them to Miguel's old friend Emily, happily married to an eccentric Irish playwright, Nick, with whom she is raising two boys. Into this web falls Miguel's sister Lena, a former addict and stripper who begins a passionate affair with Nick while deciphering the mysteries of her past. But every action these couples make has unforeseen consequences. As Lena faces her long-hidden demons and the fragile friendships between Miguel and Chad and Nick and Emily begin to fray as the baby's birth draws near, a shocking turn of events, and the secret Lena's been hiding, threaten to break them apart forever. By turns funny, dark, and sexy, Every Kind of Wanting strips bare the layers of the American family today. Tackling issues such as assimilation, the legacy of secrets, the morality of desire, and ultimately, who owns love. The characters, across all ethnicities, nationalities, and sexualities, are blisteringly alive. Or Where We Come From by Oscar Cesares. From a distance, the towns along the U.S.-Mexican border have dangerous reputations. On one side, drug cartels. On the other, zealous border patrol agents. And Brownsville is no different. But to 12-year-old Orly, it's simply where his grandmother Nina lives, and where he is being forced to stay the summer after his mother's sudden death. For Nina, Brownsville is where she grew up, and where she lost her first and only love, and where she stayed as her relatives moved away and her neighborhood deteriorated. It's the place where she's buried all her secrets, and now she has another. She's providing refuge for a young immigrant boy named Daniel, for whom traveling to America has meant trading one set of dangers for another. Separated from the violent human traffickers who brought him across the border, pursued by authorities, Daniel must stay completely hidden under Nina's roof. But when Orly discovers Daniel's presence, the two boys' immediate kinship and shared desire for independence puts them all at risk of exposure. Tackling the crisis of U.S. immigration policy from a deeply human angle, Where We Come From explores through an intimate lens the ways that family history shapes us, how secrets can burden us, and how finding compassion and understanding for others can ultimately set us free. Bonus segment! My personal favorite Goodreads list, Speak No Evil is on, is Ooh, Shiny, March 2018. Happy reading, everyone! Today's library tidbit is about the history of tabletop gaming and the emergence of Dungeons & Dragons. A lot of people assume that tabletop gaming started in the 60s, but it's actually been around much, much longer than that. The definition of tabletop game covers a very wide array of types of games, including chess, shogi, backgammon, mahjong, and go. However, Dungeons & Dragons specifically developed out of war games. War games started as a military training tool. The Prussians were the first known people to use tabletop wargaming, and they did so for military training. If you look at images of what they used, you'd be surprised at how little some aspects of tabletop gaming hasn't changed. When wargaming was started, it was about creating realistic miniatures of battlefields in order to run through different possible maneuvers and to try to train personnel on possible enemy strategy. Once the Prussians beat the French in the Franco-Prussian War, wargaming became a more widely used training strategy and also spread to be a fun hobby. One of the more well-known early wargame players was author H.G. Wells, who created a rulebook for a game called Little Wars that used toy soldiers, a large open area like a living room floor or a lawn, and spring-loaded cannon to attack opponents with. Over time, war games developed a small but strong following. In 1971, Gary Gygax and Jeff Perron released Chainmail, a medieval war game. It was from developing this game and adding in fantasy elements that Gary Gygax and Dave Arnzen developed Dungeons & Dragons. In fact, if you compare the earliest Dungeons & Dragons artwork to the Chainmail artwork, you may spot a few similarities. Gary Gygax was a well-known enthusiast of wargaming. He was published in several magazines and guides about wargames and founded the Lake Geneva Tactical Studies Association. This association would be responsible for putting together several different wargames over the years. Gygax and Don Kay founded the Tactical Studies Rules, later TSR Incorporated, to publish Dungeons & Dragons. Until the mid-1970s, Avon Hill was responsible for publishing the majority of the popular wargames played. Gary Gygax and his associates connected different subgenres together to form a wider audience for tabletop gaming. Many different fantasy authors are influences on the game, including J.R.R. Tolkien, Paul Anderson, Jack Vance, Fritz Lieber, and Lewis Carroll. This is by no means an exhaustive list, but I don't think you want to listen to me list off authors for 2 minutes. Most of the races were heavily influenced by the work of J.R.R. Tolkien, so much so that the Tolkien estate threatened copyright infringement and had several of the names changed in later editions. Dungeons & Dragons has been no stranger to controversy over the years of its publication. The vast majority of them have come from people misunderstanding the fundamentals of imagination and fantasy. Because Dungeons & Dragons was the most well-known of the fantasy tabletop games at the time, several of the controversies attributed to it are actually connected to other tabletop games or other type of gaming. The most famous of these controversies is that Dungeons & Dragons is connected to Satanism. It is not. In the 1980s, several Christian groups accused, among other things, fantasy novels and fantasy tabletop games of being connected to Satanism. A high-profile missing persons case being connected to Dungeons & Dragons didn't help matters. Even in that instance, the speculation was that the missing person went missing during a live-action role-playing game, or a LARP, which is not the same thing as Dungeons & Dragons. This incident was fictionalized and sensationalized in Rona Jaffe's Mazes and Monsters and turned into a made-for-TV movie starring Tom Hanks the year after. The popularity of these two pieces of media did not help Dungeons & Dragons' reputation. I speculate, but can find no solid evidence for that speculation, bad librarianship on my part here, that the reputation hit that Dungeons & Dragons took during the 1980s is somewhat responsible for the financial problems its publisher and parent company, TSR Incorporated, had. After almost going bankrupt, the game and company were sold to Wizards of the Coast in 1997. Since then, the game and tabletop gaming in general have seen explosive growth. But what makes these games so popular? Well, let's look at some of the most popular games right now. The company that initially passed on Dungeons & Dragons, Avon Hill, published a game called Betrayal at House on the Hill, most commonly just called Betrayal. Interestingly enough, Avon Hill is now also owned by Wizards of the Coast, a subsidiary of Hasbro Games. Betrayal is a game where players are investigating a haunted house. Once the supernatural element is awoken, one of the other players betrays the others and begins working for the haunt's side. Wingspan is an incredibly popular tabletop game right now. Players are birdwatchers, trying to lure the best birds into their habitats. The player with the best collection of birds and eggs at the end of the game wins. Shadowrun is a science fantasy tabletop role-playing game set in the near future. A game master sets up and runs the gameplay, much like a dungeon master in Dungeons & Dragons, which we will touch on more in a minute. The players work together, or not together, to accomplish specific goals. These are just a tiny, insignificant sampling of the types of games available to play. All of these games require people getting together for organized gaming. People enjoy the interactive elements, and for the role-playing style games, the creative aspects of creating a story as a group. So how do you even play Dungeons & Dragons? Very simply, the game is set up and the narrative run by a person called a Dungeon Master. This person is responsible for creating the dungeons, maps that players go through, writing a narrative the players will be following, guiding the players using the narrative along the story path, playing the non-player characters and monsters, and, oh yeah, keeping the rules. Players, before starting the game, roll up a character sheet. A character sheet is where a player keeps track of their character stats and inventory. The steps of creating your characters, according to D&D Beyond, an online toolset to play D&D, which I will highlight a bit more later, is to choose your race, then choose your class, then determine your ability scores, then describe your character, and choose equipment. You have to do this in this order, as various choices you make inform later choices while creating a character. Since there are several editions of D&D, and also some expanded rule sets, I'm not even going to attempt to explain them today. The basic rules races that you can choose from are Dragonborn, Dwarf, Elf, Gnome, Half-Elf, Halfling, Half-Orc, Human, and Tiefling. Each race has strengths and weaknesses, so it's important to read over those before committing to one. The basic rules classes that you can choose from are Barbarian, Bard, Cleric, Druid, Fighter, Monk, Paladin, Ranger, Rogue, Sorcerer, Warlock, and Wizard. Again, make sure that you have read over the strengths and abilities and weaknesses for each class before deciding on one. Although D&D is famous for being played in person and on a shared tabletop, the game has a devoted online game scene in the modern day. Online D&D groups function the same as their offline counterparts, with a dungeon master and a handful of players, except, instead of sharing a table, the group members meet over voice and video chat programs like Discord, Google Hangouts, Skype, or Zoom. Online groups sometimes form out of necessity. It is not uncommon for in-person groups to move online over the years as friends move away due to schooling or careers. Others use online groups as their launching point into the hobby since they may not know anyone interested in playing the game in their area. However, others prefer online groups due to the sheer variety of groups available to join. This allows players to join campaigns that match their interests, Whether it's dungeon crawling or political intrigue or a group of bards forming a boy band, as well as find groups that better fit their busy schedules. Of course, hybrid groups also exist, combining in-person friends with long-distance friends from across the country or the world. D&D lends itself perfectly for online groups because the game requires few technical resources to play and materials for the game can be found online. While you might prefer to play D&D online with a modern laptop, it's not a requirement. If players are open to still writing character information down on paper, joining an online D&D group can be done through a cell phone. For rules and materials, players can use a physical game manual they check out from the library or buy from the store. They can also rely on free online resources like the System Reference Documents, or SRD, that Wizards of the Coast has released for every edition of D&D from 3.0 to 5.1. Groups may even explore the endless number of fan-made homebrew options posted on blogs, websites, and forums that expands the game's classes, races, or mechanics beyond the standard rules. Digital character sheets can be made using editable PDFs from Wizard of the Coast or through customizable spreadsheets made for Microsoft Excel or Google Sheets. Lastly, rolling dice can be done through an online dice roller or through rolling dice at home and using your camera to show the results. With these components, almost all of which are free, it is possible to not only play in the comfort of your own home, but spend time with friends who are multiple time zones away. So if you're interested in playing in an online D&D group, where do you get started? Well, like in-person groups, the easiest way to find an online group is to know a friend in one. However, if that is not possible, you can always look to social media and online discussion boards. Online D&D groups looking for new members, whether new players or a new dungeon master, will often advertise on dndbeyond.com or the Looking for a Group subreddit. It also does not hurt to look elsewhere, as there are plenty of Facebook groups and other websites to look through. Several library workers here enjoy a variety of different tabletop gaming, and we hope that if you're interested, you look into trying out one of the online services. And now it's time for Book Traveler, with Victor.
Bienvenidos a una nueva edición de Viajero de Libros. Mi nombre es Víctor y soy el bibliotecario de la Biblioteca Pública de Largo. Hoy les voy a hablar sobre un libro de ficción que tenemos en la colección en español que se titula La fruta del borrachero, por Ingrid Rojas Contreras. La sinopsis. En este cautivador debut, Ingrid Rojas se inspira en su propia vida para contraponer el paso de la infancia a la vida adulta de dos potentes voces narrativas. Un relato exuberante que, embarcado en una de las épocas más convulsas de Colombia, arroja luz sobre los inesperados lazos que pueden nacer entre dos mujeres cuando se ven enfrentadas a la violencia más descarada. Bogotá, en la década de los 90, la familia Santiago vive en una comunidad exclusiva y cerrada. A salvo de la agitación política que aterroriza el país, la pequeña de la familia, Chula, que tiene 7 años, parece vivir en una burbuja. Pero la amenaza de los secuestros, los coches bomba y los magnicidios se cierne fuera del barrio, donde el omnipotente Pablo Escobar sigue eludiendo a las autoridades y aterrorizando a la nación. Cuando su madre contrata a Petrona, una criada procedente de las barriadas ocupadas por la guerrilla, Shuli intenta congeniar con ella, pero Petrona, que trata de sustentar a su familia mientras el primer amor la lleva a la dirección equivocada, oculta más de lo que parece. Así, niña y criada se ven envueltas en una red de secretos que las obligará a elegir entre el sacrificio y la traición. Opinión. En La fruta del borrachero, la llegada de Petrona complica la vida de los Santiago, sacándolos de su burbuja de burgueses bogotanos para lanzarlos dentro de la brutal realidad de su país, cuando estaban en plena guerra contra el gobierno colombiano, el cartel de Medellín y su líder, Pablo Escobar. Así describe la narradora de la novela, la pequeña Chula, el hombre omnipresente en la década de los años 90. Era el rey Midas, de las palabras. Todo lo que tocaba lo transformaba en narco, seguido de un guión. Narco paramilitar, narco guerra, narco abogado, narco congresista, narco estado, narco terrorismo y narco dinero. A la narración de Chula se le une también la voz en primera persona de Petrona, una joven proveniente de uno de los sectores más pobres de la ciudad, la protagonista de una historia mucho peor, y testimonio de la enorme iniquidad de la sociedad colombiana, y de cómo la violencia también se reparte de forma desigual entre los pobres y ricos. El argumento de la novela se edifica sobre la amistad entre Shula y Petrona, una historia de solidaridad entre dos mujeres en el peor momento de una crisis de que tantas víctimas y victimarios se dejó tener inocentes o culpables. Lo más doloroso de La fruta del borrachero es que los acontecimientos más increíbles de ese argumento ocurrieron de verdad. Enmarcada entre los convulsos años entre 1989 y 1994, la narración comienza en tiempos del asesinato del candidato presidencial Luis Carlos Galán, y continúa describiendo el largo periodo de sequía, así como los apagones y la falta de agua que resultaron, y la espectacular persecución de Pablo Escobar, además de su última entrevista, y la oración hallada en el bolsillo de su camisa cuando lo mataron. La misma huella confesional de la fruta del borrachero, que se le otorga fuerza distintiva a la voz de Rojas Contreras, representa una revolución en la literatura hispanoamericana. Porque La fruta del borrachero no es una novela mala entre narcos y policías, malos y buenos. La manera como biografía la novela que narra es ficticia, es su grande acierto. Es todo por hoy, hasta la próxima edición de Viajero de Libros. Adiós.
Thanks, Victor, for another great book review. Remember, if you happen to not know Spanish, check out the English language translation in the show notes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Check out our virtual programs now available, and also sign up for the summer reading program on Beanstack. We hope everyone's staying safe out there, and we hope to talk to you again soon. I'm gonna get that wrong. I'm gonna get so many annoyed Dungeons and Dragons people, let me know. Each reese.